I'm Kate Remington. I'm talking with Edward Cumming. He's one of the candidates for the position of music director and conductor at the Stamford Symphony Orchestra, and he'll be conducting a program of all-American music on Saturday, October 13th, and Sunday, October 14th. And Edward, it's great to have a chance to talk with you.
It's wonderful to be with you, Kate, too. I'm really looking forward to this program with the Stamford Symphony. It's always a great pleasure to do an all-American program.
It's really remarkable. The theme is Bernstein at 100. And my goodness, I mean, it's hard to believe that this is the centenary of Leonard Bernstein. And maybe right off the bat, I'm curious if his conducting was what got you interested in being a conductor.
You know, this is actually something that I feel a little bit shameful about. I'm probably the only conductor of my generation who had never met Lenny, never worked with him, and never saw him perform. I mean, I completely dropped the ball on this. I was just busy doing other things. And so many friends and colleagues of mine claim not to just have studied with Bernstein, but also to be proteges of his. Like, for example, another conductor later this season at Stamford, Lucas Richmond, he was very close to Leonard Bernstein. I got to, you know, work with him very closely. But I did not, and I was not so influenced by his conducting. I think later in his life I did get more interested in his conducting, but not so much early on. There were other conductors that I was much more fascinated with. But in terms of Bernstein's music, I mean, that's been a constant for me, you know, beginning certainly with the music for West Side Story. You know, so many works that he wrote in the 1950s along with this that were just, you know, pure genius. And so it's really great stuff.
Oh, yeah, and the symphonic dances from West Side Story will be on the program. And I was wondering, since he was a composer and a conductor, and he obviously knew orchestras from the inside out, kind of like Mahler, do you find that when you're conducting his music that he's written, because he knew orchestras so well too, does that make it a different experience conducting his music?
Well, it depends on what piece. You know, for this particular piece, it's his music, but it's actually not his orchestration. He had a couple of other guys, very close colleagues, Sid Raymond and Erwin Kostal, do it for him. I'm sure he gave them guidance. So it's in this sense, it's really his music, but someone else's orchestration. But with other works that Bernstein, like for example, a piece that I did last year was his Chichester Psalms, mm-hmm. and every note of that is his, and that's just, you know, like West Side Story, really, really great music. I mean, certainly one of the greatest pieces from this later period.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very different doing a piece like that than West Side Story, because also, you know, when you do Bernstein music, there's a part of me that thinks, okay, Bernstein took such liberty with other composers' music. Does that mean it's okay for us to take liberty with his music? and that's what I'm thinking about with this. There are actually some things where I'm thinking about doing things a little bit differently, even differently from the last time when I did the piece. And he would completely be all over that. He'd be so okay with it, as long, because this is something that I know from, like, Michael Tilson Thomas, with whom I studied and was a very close friend and colleague of Bernstein's. And he talked about Lenny in this way, that he would ask Michael, like, say, okay, give me five different ways to do this Schumann passage. And he'd just keep asking, okay, one, two, three, and he'd go right through them. And then he'd say, okay, which one do you like the most? Okay, and do you really believe in it? And that was really all that was what was most important to Bernstein, is that whatever you did with his music or anyone else's music, that you really believed in doing it that particular way. That was, you know, the commitment was most important to him.
Yeah, it's an amazing way of thinking about music, for sure. And what's so interesting about West Side Story is it's one of those pieces that has almost a double life. It was a Broadway show, and now it's part of the, you know, concert orchestra canon pretty much. And the work that you've chosen by Joan Tower, Tambor, is also very interesting. I was reading an interview by her from quite a few years ago, but she was talking about how important it is to not keep music in silos. And she really feels that music shouldn't be pigeonholed as either classical or pop music or Broadway or whatever. And so I think it's really great that you've got one of her works on the program too.
Joan Tower's Tambor is the only piece that I selected, actually. The rest of the program was... I think I selected the Gershwin as well. The Bernstein and the Copland were given to me, and I selected the Gershwin and the Tower. And I have a particular closeness to Tambor because, well, it just so happens that 20 years ago, when the piece was premiered in Pittsburgh, I was there.
Wow.
And that's when I met Joan. And so I was there for all the rehearsals, sitting right next to her and taking notes and her comments and then delivering her notes to the conductor. And so, you know, I felt like I learned a lot, not just about Tambor, but about the way she thinks about music. And she knew that Beethoven's Fifth Symphony was going to be on the same program. So, you know, imagine being a composer and writing a piece of music that has to stand up to Beethoven. And I think that was a lot of pressure for her. And she met it, because this piece, it's a knockout piece. It's of course, the harmony and melodic writing is very modern, and yet structurally, it could not be more classical. I mean, it has a slow introduction, just like a Haydn symphony. It has a fast section after that, and it even has a place where the music comes back. So it's, in many ways, it's very classical, and other ways it's modern, and it's just her mastery of the orchestra and of the percussion in particular. I mean, I think there are 32 different percussion instruments she uses in the piece, so those guys are going to be really busy for her piece.
Yeah, it has like a really personal connection for her. It kind of, the sound of it, I think, grew out of her time in Bolivia and hearing the drumming that she was listening to there. So it's going to be a really great piece. I don't think the Stanford Symphony has ever done it. So
I'm sure this is probably even a New England premiere, not just Connecticut. You know, it's just Joan. She's had performances elsewhere. The National Symphony's recorded it. Of course, the Pittsburgh Symphony premiered it, and I know other orchestras have done it. But I don't know that it's ever been done anywhere with any orchestra in this part of the country. So this could be a local premiere.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And you've also got Copland's Clarinet Concerto with Pavel Vinitsky, and you mentioned that was already kind of locked in, but it's such a great fit with the pieces that you've chosen, too. And have you worked with Pavel before?
I have not. We've communicated, you know, online, and I know that he is a wonderful performer, very gifted, and is one of the, you know, most, you know, in-demand clarinetists in the New York area. So I'm really looking forward to working with him.
Yeah, and it's another piece, this clarinet concerto, that kind of crosses the boundaries again, too, because he wrote it for Benny Goodman, and so he was able to, you know, really kind of pick up on the things that Benny Goodman, that were unique to his style. And I think even back then, people were searching for kind of a fusion and a way to make classical music a little bit more relevant, I think, and a little bit more approachable.
There were a number of pieces that Copland wrote in this vein. His another concerto that he wrote, the piano concerto, has a lot of jazz elements in it. But this clarinet concerto, it's really great. I mean, even there are places where he even has the basses play a slap pits, where all of a sudden you feel like you're in the Village Vanguard, you know, and there's like a smoke-filled room, and it's just all of a sudden you just feel like you're out of the concert hall and in some really tiny space where, you know, everybody's sitting at a table with a drink in their hand. It's he really summons a lot of different worlds in this music.
Yeah, it's so much fun to hear live, too, because every time I've seen it, the clarinetist just like really gets into it. So that'll be a really fun thing for the audiences as well. And then the Gershwin, you mentioned, it's An American in Paris. And, you know, I always wondered how it is that the taxi horns that the orchestras use sound the same, no matter who's performing it. And is it true that you get, like, the horns when you request the parts? They come with the horns?
Yeah. I think there may be only one or two places that actually, and I know one of them is in New York. Maybe New York's the only place. It's a really good question, Kate. But the taxi horns, I think they do come from the same place, which would explain why they often sound the same, you know, no matter where you play it.
Yeah, and I used to think that it was an apocryphal story of Gershwin combing through the Parisian flea markets for taxi horns, but I actually saw a little bit of film of him doing that. So so that certainly gives it a real sense of place and an authenticity for that like moment in Paris when he was there.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done the piece a number of times, but this is the first time where I actually combed through his manuscript of the facsimile of the manuscript, so that, and I found a number of things that don't jive with what is usually done in performance, where there are certain things, and I'm going to be putting those in our performance, because those were, I think, guys like Walter Damrosch, they came along afterwards and thought that this or that would be better. And I prefer what Gershwin wrote, you know, first time around. It's so it'll be fun to actually do some of these things with the Stanford Symphony, because I'm sure they, all of the players, I'm sure, have done the piece a number of times. But this will be the first time that they've done it with these little different notes that I've given them based on what I saw in the facsimile.
That'll be really interesting. And then with that and the piece that they maybe have never played before, Tambour, how do you, as a conductor, make the most of your very limited amount of rehearsal time to make sure that you convey what you want and get them up to speed, especially with a new piece like Tambour?
It's true that there's not a lot of rehearsal time, but this is par for the course for most professional orchestras throughout the country, that there's only three working rehearsals and then you go. But this is also the Stanford Symphony, which is made up of, you know, the finest freelance New York instrumentalists. And so, you know, I'm thinking they're probably going to be playing the Bernstein, the Gershwin, like perfectly the first time around. And so that, you know, we'll probably spend a little bit more time on Jones' piece and on the Copland, because those pieces are not played as frequently. But the Bernstein and the Gershwin, I'm not expecting to have to do hardly anything. I mean, these musicians, they know how this music goes. You know, I'm just going to give them a downbeat and stay out of the way.
Well, have you had a chance to watch them in action and see kind of where they really excel and where you can push them a little bit?
There are other conductors that have told me that they've gone to hear the Stanford Symphony. I never have made that trip. I've never even been in the Palace Theater. So it's going to be first time for me. So, but fortunately, we all speak the same language. So we just get in there and we just go right to work.
Yeah, that'll be really exciting. Sort of like your first time driving a Ferrari, probably. And so.
Yeah, I was thinking more like a Maserati.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm sure that anything that I ask of them, they'll be able to do.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they really are world-class musicians.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I think a lot of orchestras, some orchestras have like really cracked it and others are still struggling with it, but being relevant and staying relevant and being a part of their community. And so if you're chosen as the new music director and conductor for Stanford, I mean, what are your thoughts on what you might do with the orchestra?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Because every single conductor gets asked, okay, what are you going to do to help bring in more audience? And there's no one answer. There's no one right. I mean, every community has different needs and demands. Now, fortunately, Stanford serves many different communities, you know, in the, because, you, I mean, I'm assuming that not people just from Stanford, but also like from Westport or from Darien or from, you know, Greenwich will come to they come to hear the orchestra on a regular basis. But in terms of audience development, a lot of this happens just one person at a time. I would endeavor to go to every school in the area to meet the teachers and the students and speak, you know, to different groups. I've already done that for this concert. And I know music teachers in the area, and so I would already, you know, begin looking at these people and saying, hey, you know, could you bring your students to the matinee? But I think there also has to be a reason to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I have something in store for the matinee just for the children. So if children come, I'm going to have them do something with the orchestra that the adults don't get to do on Saturday night.
Wow.
So that's a little enticing that I'm just going to throw out there. So I hope that anyone who listens in on this will not be afraid to bring their children, because they are going to be performing with the Stanford Symphony.
Wow.
On next Sunday. Yep.
That's
very
cool.
We're going to rehearse it, too.
Oh,
we're going to rehearse it. I'm going to take a moment during the program to rehearse it.
Oh, that sounds like loads of fun.
So it'll be fun. Yeah.
Well, Edward, it's been really fun talking with you, and this is just such a fantastic program, and we're all really looking forward to hearing what you do with the orchestra. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate.